The Jumping Turtle family is pleased to bring you Hank Helps, the funny, thought-provoking, and entertaining podcast by world-renowned speaker and author Hank Smith. We hope you enjoy it.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to another edition of Hank Helps. I'm grateful that you are here, whether there's just one of you or 100 of you. Doesn't make a difference to me. The worth of souls is great in the sight of God, right? Hey, I wanted to talk about something that I hope will give parents and family members of those who seem to be making wrong choices some hope. So I read to my boys every night that I'm home. It's been a lot lately since COVID hit. And recently we were reading a little bit of C.S. Lewis and the Chronicles of Narnia, and it reminded me of this story. Some of you will have seen this movie where I can't remember which book it is of the Chronicles of Narnia, but it's the one where Eustace is there's a boy named Eustace who goes with his cousins to Narnia, and he's a very difficult, ornery, kind of bratty kid, and he goes through this experience. Of course, the movie can't do the book justice. So I wanted to maybe give you some background. If you've seen the movie but never read the book, a little bit of background into what Lewis was trying to do and the story he was telling and how that can give us hope. So Eustace in the book did not like being in Narnia, he was on a ship going on a journey in an ocean, and he was, you know, with Prince Caspian, and he's just upset about the whole thing. Nobody likes him. He doesn't like anybody. It's a pretty bad situation. Well, when they get finally to an island, he goes exploring by himself, finds a treasure, and in this treasure, he feels like he's the greatest thing in the world, and he's going to go and be rich, and he can get rid of all of these people around him, and, you know, he has all these devilish thoughts. In fact, it says, Lewis writes this. Now, try to listen with your spiritual ears here about Eustace. He said, "The bed of treasures seemed to have grown much more comfortable over time. In fact, he could hardly feel it at all." So laying in, you know, all the gold and jewelry and things, it's supposed to be uncomfortable. But the more he laid there, the more he got comfortable with it. And you can kind of see what Lewis is doing here with evil and sin. And then he said, "Sleeping's on a dragon's treasure with greedy dragonish thoughts in his heart, he had become a dragon himself." So as long as he stayed with the treasure in these sins, it kind of transforms who he is. It changes his nature. I remember once teaching a group of younger teenagers, and someone said, "Oh, I listen to this music," and someone else said, "Hey, that's pretty bad music, right? They say a lot of bad things. They talk about bad things." And I remember the kid said, "Yeah, I felt bad about that at first, but I just kept listening to it, and after a while, that feeling went away." Right? The bed of treasure seemed to have grown more comfortable. In fact, after a while, he could hardly feel it at all. Right? He becomes this dragon, and it takes him a while to figure that out. He looks on the wall of the cave, and there's the shadow of the dragon. He doesn't realize it's him for quite a while. He thinks the dragon's going to hurt him, but then he realizes it's him. So he goes to find his cousins, who he was on the ship with, Lucy and Edmund, who had been to Narnia before, trying to explain it to him. This is his first time there. And as he flies down there, he can't talk. He's a dragon now. And so they try to kill him because he's a dragon. They don't know it's Eustace. And eventually Lucy finds out who he is. I think that's part of the movie. But I want you to hear some of the text here. "An appalling loneliness came over him. It was very dreary being a dragon. He shuddered whenever he caught sight of his own reflection. He was ashamed to be with the others." Isn't that fascinating? Right? That here they didn't like him. Here he had changed into this dragon, and inwardly he is really struggling. David O. McKay said the most universal battles in life are the private struggles we go through in our own mind, in our own heart every day. And sometimes we look at people and think they don't have those inward struggles or inward battles with themselves because they put on a pretty face and, you know, act like everything's fine. But things which are most universal, things which are most personal are most universal. And everybody goes through these inner battles of, you know, are they living the way they want to live? Are they living according to what they believe? Everybody has these inner struggles. So he doesn't want to be a dragon anymore, as you might have guessed, because they can't take him on the boat. And he can't fly all that way. He'll need somewhere to rest, but he'll tip the boat over, and his cousins don't want to leave him, right? I think part of him wants to leave him, but they know they can't leave him. And he's changing through all this difficulty and of being a dragon. He's trying to figure out, and he becomes kind of helpful, right? He can start fires for them. So he's changing and they're changing, and eventually they have to decide if they're going to leave him there or, you know, leave some people there with him. Like, what are we going to do with him? And here's what happens. It says, I was lying awake and wondering what on earth would become of me when I looked up and I saw a huge lion coming slowly towards me. It told me to follow it. It led me a long way into the mountains. There was always light round the lion wherever he went. Right? The lion, Aslan, represents Christ in the books. So at last we came to the top of a mountain, and there was a garden, trees and fruit and everything. In the middle of it, there was a very big round bath with marble steps going down into it. I thought if I could get in there and bathe, it would ease the pain. But the lion told me I must undress first. Suddenly, I thought that dragons are snaky sort of things, and snakes can shed their skin. So I started scratching at myself, and the scales began coming off. I scratched a little deeper, and my whole skin started peeling off beautifully. I could see it there beside me, looking rather nasty. It was the most lovely feeling. I scratched and tore again, and another skin peeled off beautifully. I thought to myself, how many skins have I got to take off? For I was longing to bathe. You know, a long time ago, back in the 1900s, I was a brand new teacher, and I had noticed that a couple of students had wonderful experiences with the gospel in my class. I had kind of watched them, and I saw them, that the impact it would have on them. But then I got kind of discouraged, because the impact that it would have seemed to fade, and they would kind of go back to, you know, just being these little teenage punks. And I was getting discouraged and frustrated at their behavior not changing. And another teacher, I was talking to him about it, and he said, you know, he told me this story of Eustace. This is before the movies, right? Not before movies in general, but just before the movies, these movies came out. I'm not that old. And he told me this story of Eustace, and he said, you know, whenever I see my students going through these spiritual experiences, I think of Eustace peeling off his own skin. It's not making a huge difference, but he's trying. They're trying to get rid of these, you know, these sins in their life. And then they kind of go back to it, but then they try to peel off another layer, and so it has a little impact. And then they go back to their old life, and then they try to peel off another layer. And he said, you got to give that time. They've got to go through that process of slowly peeling away at the sins in their life. And I think that's wise, right? I think I've allowed that for myself. I've allowed that for family. And as a teacher, I was like, oh, you know, I should allow for that. And then as he kept telling me the story, he told me what happened next. Eustace is trying to take this skin off. And then the lion said, you will have to let me. So here's, you know, Eustace trying to peel off his skin. He's just scratching at his surface. It was hurting a little bit, but finally the lion comes to him. And maybe after we've tried so hard to do this ourselves, then finally the Savior says, can I try? The lion says, you'll have to let me. And then I think there comes a moment or a period of time for every person who's going to make the conversion over from natural man to saint, Mosiah chapter 3. Here's what Eustace says in the book. The very first tear he made was so deep that I thought it had gone right into my heart. It hurt worse than anything I've ever felt. The only thing that made me able to bear it was just the pleasure of feeling that stuff peel off. So here we are, kind of scratching, kind of going, oh, I got to get rid of these sins. And finally, the Savior comes up. Can I help? Well, sure. And here comes this claw from the lion, right, that doesn't go skin deep. It goes all the way to the heart and rips open the body of this dragon. And inside is this little boy, Eustace. He caught hold of me and threw me into the water. It hurt, but only for a moment. After that, I found all the pain had gone. And Eustace comes back to camp and he's telling them this story. It says, "Great was the rejoicing when the restored Eustace walked into the circle around the campfire. No one, least of all Eustace himself, felt any desire to go back for more treasure." So he's lost his desire for the dragon's cave. Now, here is something that I think every parent, every teacher needs to hear. It would be nice and fairly true, Lewis writes, to say that from that time forth, Eustace was a different boy. To be strictly accurate, he began to be a different boy. The cure had begun. To me, that is beautifully messy. You would love to say, and maybe in the scriptures, you know, from that day forth, they changed forever. And those scriptures do belong, or those stories do belong in the scriptures. But the reality of our students and our children is that they have to peel off a little here, a little there. They have large moments in life where the Savior helps them progress, you know, rapidly, and then still they have to keep working on it here and there. It would be nice and fairly true to say from some point on, our children will be totally different, or our students will be totally different. To be strictly accurate, they begin to be different. The cure has begun. And I think that might be a different goal for us as parents, not necessarily to rid our children of all bad behaviors, all sins, or to, as the teachers, to rid our students are, you know, of all sins, or as church leaders to get rid of all the sins in our youth, or right. But we want to begin the cure, that we introduce them to Christ and let them start to peel off those layers and maybe have one of those experiences with Christ where he rips into their heart, right? And let that cure begin. So, again, I hope it was just a helpful thought. I hope you'll never give up hope on friends and family and loved ones who seem to be making wrong choices. I wrote a book on parables. It sold, you know, a couple dozen copies to my mom, but there's one parable about the parable of the laborers in the vineyard, and there's some 11th hour workers there who come and they work for like 5 minutes, and then they're paid the exact same as the people who have been there all day. And, you know, if you read that parable when you're young, you're going, this is not fair. I've been here all day and these people come in at the very end. Why should they get the same reward? But as you get older and you become a parent and a teacher, you start to love that parable because you want those children who aren't yet in the vineyard or those students who are not yet in the vineyard. You want them to come in, even if it's at the last possible moment, and get the full reward. And I think that is the beauty of what the Savior's saying in that parable is, don't give up hope. I can go get them, even with 2 minutes left on the work day, right? With 5 seconds left on the clock, I'll go get them. And I think that's part of having faith in the Savior, right? What did Elder Maxwell say? Having faith in the Lord is having faith in the Lord's timing. All right, my friends, thank you so much for being here for Hank Helps. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you love the app, our Turtle House. Please shoot me an email, hank@hanksmith.com. If you have any comments or questions or anything you want me to talk about, please let me know and I will bring it up. All right, see you soon. Happy days.
Thanks for listening to Hank Helps by Hank Smith. We love to hear from our turtle family. If you have a question, comment, or topic suggestion for Hank, let us know. Just send an email through the submission form on the Hank Helps page on our Turtle House. Until next week.